This hour, waiting patiently, is Dr. Berge, our guest. He's usually in the studio. You're calling in today, right?
Yes, I'm virtually here and virtually on time.
Right.
But far, far away.
You're always on time.
I try.
So
yeah, I'm kind of getting over a bug, too, so I wanted to spare you the unnecessary risk.
Well,
so
thanks.
I'm calling from home right now.
Now, we posted a thread on Facebook if you wanted to ask Dr. Berge any pet vet kind of questions. You can still text or email johnny@jodesha.com while he's on the phone, but you can't really call up because, well, he's on the phone.
Yes. But we'll kind of multitask on that. But, I happily, this is one of the main purposes on my time here is to give you free veterinary advice. And by the way, I think you gave me a line kind of pre-list of questions you might be asking me today, and one of them was, how about those online veterinarians and things? Are they any good? You know, like what I'm doing right now? And, of course, the answer is, I'm good.
Nice.
And free. No, but basically, if you are getting advice, whether human medical advice or veterinary advice, and you're actually talking to a certified medical professional or certified veterinary professional, which could be a veterinarian or could be a nurse, if you're actually talking on one of those through a confirmed, you know, non-bogus site, that is extremely valuable advice. You know, they are limited to certain things. You know, they can give you advice. They'll take symptoms and give you advice based on what you share with them. But they can't do things like make a prescription over the telephone and so forth.
Oh, they can't?
Well, okay, maybe they can. It depends on the circumstances.
Right.
But you can, it's perfectly okay and, in fact, encouraged to do sort of online interactions, but you can only do what makes sense, you know. But a lot of the things, the valuable stuff for to veterinary or human conversation is just words. You know, you share the history and answer questions, and then they'll typically have some good advice for you,
okay.
And often very cheap.
So Blue Cross Vet, you're at 916 Clark Road, Aberdeen, Washington. Isn't that like Central Park?
Yeah. You can't see us from the freeway. There's two vets you can see from the freeway. There's Grays Harbor Vet, which is the one that's in Montesano, and then way off towards Elm, you know, in Brady, there's Brady Vet. You can see those two from the freeway, but you cannot see Blue Cross Vet from the freeway. You have to get off on Central Park Drive and see us on the old road.
Take the scenic
route. We had freeway frontage for 2 years. They built this big road around 1932, and then Blue Cross Vet was... The Central Park Drive was already there. That was the main crowd. And that's where Dr. Clark set up in 1929. But then, in 1932, they built what's now the freeway. And so that's the main drag now.
Okay. And your website, Blue Cross Veterinary Clinic, WA.com?
Yeah, yep. And the purpose of the website is just to kind of say hello. But in terms of actual interacting, you have to pick up the telephone and call the clinic.
Okay.
And then when you do that, you'll get a receptionist who will then try to convert that into an office call, with the understanding that every vet clinic, including Blue Cross Vet, is so overbooked that we can't necessarily see you right away like we could 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
You may have to wait, and then they will counsel you on maybe what can be waited for and what cannot. But once again, they are limited on what sort of veterinary advice they can give directly over the phone.
Right, right. And, of course, over the phone, they don't keep their lights on that way, right?
Yes. Now, that's the other thing. Every veterinarian and every physician does a certain amount of advice on the phone. And sometimes, I've never done it myself, you know, lawyers and even physicians will sometimes bill you for telephone time. I never do that, even though some clients have kind of asked me to do it. I want you to come in person, and then I'll bill you.
Nice. Have you seen those, like, commercials and ads for your pet medications and stuff that you can order on the interwebs through the Google machine?
Oh, yeah, you know, the petmeds.com and Doctors Foster and Smith and so forth.
Right.
Walmart, as usual, is trying to get in on that action, too. Honestly, those are smoking hot deals. You can get good prices there. You typically, if it is a prescription product, you will need a prescription.
Okay.
they'll sell you a lot of stuff, but if it's a legally a prescription product, you can start your order, but they won't actually ship it to you until they can get an authorization from a veterinarian.
Okay, so I can't just call up and say, hey, I want a bunch of pain meds for my dog. He's got a hurt leg. They can't just, oh, okay, here you go.
Well, what they will do, and this kind of makes it a little easier for you, but please don't abuse the privilege. You can make the order, and then they'll tell you, well, they'll ask you, well, where's your veterinarian? And you say Blue Cross Vet. You make your order, assuming you know exactly what you want. And then I will get a fax saying that the customer has requested this. Do you accept it or do you decline it? And then if it's out of the blue, of course, I will decline it.
Right, right.
But you now the request is right there in my hands, which is an easy way to do a prescription.
So do they help local veterinarians or do they hurt?
Well, the veterinarians, once upon a time, human doctors would typically have a small pharmacy in their office. This was a long time ago. I think they gave this up kind of in the 20s and 30s. Even then, you would go down the street a block or two and go to a regular pharmacy to get your drugs. But veterinarians, because they have a lot of specialty drugs, and often involving cows and horses and things, veterinarians have always traditionally had a pharmacy built into the practice. And that is a source of income. Anyone who sells you drugs, whether it's a part one room in a veterinary clinic, which is their pharmacy, or whether it's a dedicated pharmacy, whoever's selling you drugs is making a profit on them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a little profit, maybe it's a big profit, but it's a business that earns money. So the veterinarians have always had a pharmacy built into their practices, and every veterinary clinic still does. But whenever the drugs can be obtained cheaper somewhere else, that kind of draws down the size of your pharmacy over time. So veterinarians' pharmacies are not as robust as they were once upon a time because a lot of that business is going to the online sellers.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of hurting you then.
Yeah, but not a whole lot because it never was a lot of net profit to begin with.
Oh, okay.
So we actually earn our money from services. So okay. Those office calls and those surgery fees, that's where our actual money comes from.
So
now, it's funny. Veterinarians can earn a lot of money on certain products if you mark them up. But if you mark them up, then the prices are crazy and stupid and evil.
And then people go online and buy them cheaper.
Yeah. So you kind of shoot yourself in the foot.
Right.
What's particularly frustrating is a new product will come out on the market, like Advantage 30 years ago. And the salesman will say, okay, we're going to do this only through veterinarians. All you have to do is put your reputation behind this product, and then the product will start selling, and you'll make money, and we'll make money, and it will never, ever, ever show up at Walmart. And, of course, when the salesman told me that, I felt he was lying, and he was. Okay, when somebody tells you something that you know is not actually true, they're not necessarily lying to you. They could believe it. But if you've been around the block, you know that it's not actually going to happen.
Okay.
Anyway, so no, the salesman did not lie to me. He really believed that the product would be staying with veterinarians. But no, they got it launched with veterinarians and then started to sell it cheaper, which is fine. You can compete with that for a while by lowering your profit margin. But when the time comes when you're buying a product for $35 and it's on sale for retail at $32 at Amazon, sometimes I actually buy things retail because it's cheaper than my supplier. And that's the time when you can't really sell that product anymore.
Right. We're talking with our buddy, Dr. Michael Berge, Blue Cross Vet in Aberdeen, BlueCrossVeterinaryClinicWA.com, and he's answering any pet questions that you may have. You can email or text message johnny@jodesha.com, or you can find our Facebook, our Timber Country Facebook. I posted a thread asking for any pet questions that you may have. So what's this fentanyl for cats?
Oh, okay. I can tell you about fentanyl. We should go back to the beginning. There's a little plant called a poppy.
Yeah.
And poppies, there are lots of different poppies. But many of them, if you take the sap from the seed head and take it, eat it or smoke it, you get a buzz. So that's opium or morphine. So those are poppy compounds. just in the same way that marijuana has stuff that you can get a buzz from. So the poppy has been around for a long time. At least 3,000 or 4,000 years people have been using poppies. And you could use it. Way, way back in ancient times, people would need to, you know, set a broken bone or something like that, and they would give their patient poppy so they were kind of out of it, and it really helped a lot. And then in the late 1800s, they took some of this poppy sap and purified it just a little bit to make an injection, and that was called morphine. So morphine can be injected, or you can eat morphine too, and it's a little bit more concentrated. But morphine is actually a mix of different types of opium compounds, and it's still commercially available because it's so cheap, and it does a really nice job. But over the years, they've been taking some of those individual compounds and purifying them and selling them separately, butorphanol and things like that. That's a synthetic one. Some of the first synthetic opium compounds actually appeared about 50 years ago. And one of the earlier ones of the synthetic opium compounds is fentanyl. So a synthetic opium compound is pretty much the same as the real thing, except it's typically cheaper to manufacture. Well, okay, not always, because morphine is pretty cheap. Anyway, fentanyl was discovered at least in the, 1960s, and they became very popular with people who would go off to Africa and shoot darts into rhinoceroses and so forth and make them fall asleep, and because it was so incredibly powerful. And it was the only thing where you could put enough drug into one little dart to actually make a big animal fall asleep. So fentanyl is just like any other synthetic opium compound, except it's really, really concentrated, which is no big deal as long as you dilute it out before you use it,
mm-hmm.
or preferably the factory dilutes it out so you never even get the pure concentrated fentanyl like the drug people have been getting. So now, of course, where it comes in with the drug scene is because it's synthetic, if you have a nice laboratory, you can synthesize it illegally. But now you've got the super concentrated product, and a lot of people who don't give a you-know-what about their customers. And so many times the dilutions are not reliable. So people will be thinking they've got a diluted version and they've got a concentrated version, and they take it and bang, they're dead. So that's where the deal is with fentanyl. Really cheap, and if it's not diluted properly, really, really dangerous. But fentanyl has been in the legal market all along. So anytime you need an opioid, fentanyl is one of the ones you might turn to, and it's no better or worse than any other opium product. The DEA actually likes opium products for professionals because they're very safe. You can get the pain killed, and if the product is properly diluted, it's not dangerous for your patient. So it's good stuff, except that when the drug people get it, then it's bad.
Right, when it's abused and used incorrectly or...
Oh, hold on. Are you hearing me clearly?
Yeah, you sound great.
Oh, okay, your voice coming back is not fully clear. So as long as the listeners are hearing me okay, but you'll have to kind of shout into your speaker here a little bit.
Okay, will do, boss. So, fentanyl, it's like for surgeries for pets, like they use fentanyl for human surgeries?
Hold on, I'm changing telephones here.
Oh, okay.
How's it? You're hearing me?
Testing
on
1, 2, testing. Yeah, you sound
okay,
great.
Okay, yeah, I just switched phones. I think the battery was fading on my other phone, but I had my spare phone set up just for that purpose.
Okay.
Okay, fentanyl, about 20 or 30 years ago in the veterinary business, we were starting to experiment with fentanyl patches, which is a human product. And a fentanyl patch is just basically like a little duct tape with some fentanyl stuck into the glue.
Mm-hmm.
And you stick it onto yourself, and the fentanyl oozes through the skin and gives you a long-term pain control. And I believe the fentanyl patches are still actively used in human. And we tried them in veterinary medicine, but we found that they were a little unreliable, mostly in the sense of not getting enough. So you'd read the special education on using fentanyl for cats, like a post-surgical patch, and you cut a little piece out of the human patch and put it on the cat. And then they were finding that sometimes it would be absorbed through the skin and sometimes not. Because for one thing, you have to shave the skin, which can sometimes make it irritated, so the skin is a little rough and might absorb too much, or maybe it absorbs, maybe it's a little greasy and absorbs too little. And so they were finding that it was just not reliable, and we kind of went back to injections for most purposes.
Wow. All right. Thanks for clearing that up.
Now your voice has gone fady again. I hate to say that over the air, but...
Let's see if I can fiddle with wires here. You still not hearing me? Let me turn this volume up. Do you hear me better now?
A little bit. We'll turn that with not more. I can hear you faintly.
Okay, you can still hear me.
I can still hear you, but your voice is not really getting better. It's just a little faint.
Okay.
I mean, a lot faint.
A lot faint? Oh.
Yeah, because I'm having a little trouble. You know, my hearing's not the greatest, so unless I have all the odds cards stacked in my favor.
Have you heard of the medication Tranq? T-R-A-N-Q?
I've heard of it. I think it might even be a veterinary product. Did your research tell what the actual veterinary name is?
No, just that it's for large animals.
Oh, Tranq. Okay. I think we're talking about xylazine. Does that resonate with what you were doing?
Yes.
Okay. There is a drug, a mainstay, and I use it every day, called xylazine.
Mm-hmm.
Xylazine is a tranquilizer. Big surprise there on that. And it's a very smooth tranquilizer. And, in fact, when I'm using ketamine, which is a vitamin K, that's another drug on the market now, I always add a little xylazine to the special K. Now it's my xylazine ketamine cocktail. And the xylazine makes the ketamine smoother and gives a better experience for the kitty. Until recently, I didn't realize that the xylazine has now gone into the illegal market, and they want that stuff too. They kind of lashed onto the ketamine quite a long time ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
but there's a lot of things. Like when Tramadol first hit the market, we didn't have to register it at all. It was just a drug. And then they said, oh, well, people are wanting to deal with that. We need to add it to your list, you know, with your morphine and your phenobarbital and your other things. And so, you know, now we keep track of Tramadol. And it looks like we're going to get xylazine added to that list, which means more paperwork.
Ah, got to love that paperwork. I hear that's going up everywhere, the paperwork.
Oh, yeah. You know, and there's no limit to, you know, a government agency, how much extra paperwork they can create just kind of on the, oh, geez, wouldn't that be nice?
Right. So are you regulated with those medications a lot? I mean, do they really keep their eyeballs on it?
Those are called control. Okay. There's two levels of control. There's prescription. So any prescription drug, I need to write a prescription, but I don't need to keep records of which pill goes to which person.
Talking with Dr. Michael Berge, Blue Cross vet in Aberdeen. Actually, it's like Central Park, but still.
Yeah, then we were almost a city once upon a time. You know, it had the dance halls and everything, but now we're just a place.
We're just a place.
Yeah, I like it.
So, I wanted to know, when you were in vet school, how did you learn how to perform surgery on a cat or a dog or anything, really?
Well, the way it works is they don't let you actually cut anything for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The surgery doesn't start until they think you actually have a certain amount of competence. And then when I was in vet school, they actually had animals from an animal shelter that we would do surgery on, and then we would kill them afterwards. So we would anesthetize them, we would do some different procedures, but we wouldn't wake them up. And at that time, I graduated in 1991, there was a lot of feeling that was unkind. For one thing, though, by the way, these same animals would have been put to sleep anyways.
Oh, okay.
You know, there was a lot of killing. And so some of these, instead of being put to sleep at the animal shelter, would be put to sleep at a veterinary college, and that was just the way you did it. But there was also a kind of a groundswell of opposition, and the instructors were saying, you may be some of the last veterinary students who are doing this style. And in fact, we were. They stopped that. So what they do now, I believe, is the veterinary students, when they reach that stage of their training, will be sent out to regular veterinary colleges, veterinary private practices, or most of the veterinary colleges will do surgeries for customers. And then the vet students would do or participate with the surgeries, paid surgeries from regular customers. And those animals were not put to sleep. These were regular useful surgeries, and that's the way it's done now.
So like you observe a trained vet who's doing surgery, you would observe first and then maybe lend a hand here and there until...
Yeah, and then eventually before you graduate, you're supposed to be basically doing the whole thing. You know, the instructor is still nearby to help you out.
Right.
But you're supposed to be able to do that by the time you graduate.
Do they, like, show you first? Like, okay, this is how, you know, we fix a cat or neuter a cat. This is how we do it. And they just, like, show you
doing it? Oh, yeah.
They
work their way up. It's very sophisticated, and it's not random at all. You work way up, you know, and also with cadavers, with dead animals, you do a lot of stuff with that. And then, but to actually work on live animals now is done at private veterinary practices, or the bigger veterinary clinics also have surgeries that are done for customers on their
right.
own premises.
Right. So a person could be working on my dog, and they kind of learn by first observing and then participating, and then eventually being able to do it themselves. At my local vet, like you could do that, right? I mean, could somebody come and train with you?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Oh, nice. Do you ever do that, or?
No, I haven't really done that. I'm too busy just trying to do my job and stuff.
Right.
But that's the way it's done now.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and it works. Now, if you go to a veterinary college and get their cheap surgeries mm-hmm. for spay and neuter and so forth. It probably will be done by a veterinary student, and the skill level might not be quite as high as you would like. They're doing their best,
right?
But you have to learn somewhere.
They're learning.
Yes.
Right. I got it. Yeah, that's cool.
Now, just a bit of trivia: there's a vet college in Oregon, and there's a veterinary college in Washington. The veterinary college in Washington has been here well over 100 years, but the one in Oregon was only started in the 1980s. And at that time, they didn't even have a whole veterinary college. They borrowed the one in Washington for about half of their work, including the surgeries. And in Corvallis, Oregon, where the veterinary college is, when they first started, I think they're doing surgeries now, there was kind of a deal where they did not do surgeries for customers. And the reason is there was a fully established team of regular independent private veterinarians, and they were concerned that if a veterinary college big gorilla sits down in the middle of town and starts doing nearly free surgeries, that it would cut into their income. So they agreed that they wouldn't do that. Hmm. But, you know, the time marches on. I'm sure that promise is no longer being kept.
Right. If you have any pet questions for Dr. Berge, who is a licensed veterinarian of Blue Cross Vet, that's bluecrossveterinaryclinicwa.com, you can email or text message johnny@jodesha.com. We also have a Facebook thread on our Timber Country Facebook dedicated to Dr. Berge's appearance here on the phone. Your appearance on the phone. You like that?
Yeah, that, I think there might be a grammar issue with that.
Yeah, you're right.
I think that's outside of my box.
you and I both. So, brushing our pets. I know...
Oh, hold on. I'm going to change phones here.
Okay. We're doing the phone swap.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, this is the phone that's been sitting on the charger for 15 minutes.
Okay.
It sounds great.
Awesome.
But
you sound great on this end.
Okay, so I'll put this other one in the charger, and I think it's time for me to buy a new set of phones.
Uh-oh. So, you know, my dogs love to be brushed.
Mm-hmm.
I end up with like a pillowcase full of hair from the German Shepherd. The pit bull, she doesn't shed all that much, or not as much as the German Shepherd. But do cats, do you notice if cats like being brushed, and is it good for them? Do you know?
Okay. This is kind of a no-brainer in a certain sense. If your dog or your cat likes being brushed, they will say so. And if they don't like being brushed, they will also say so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some animals, particularly dogs, kind of like being brushed.
Right.
And a lot of cats sort of like being brushed, too. Now, one thing that dogs and cats will do is pretend to not like it, but you know they're fooling. You know, if they're saying they don't like it, but, you know, your voice says no, but your body says yes, sort of thing. So, yeah, you know, brush them. And as for how hard to brush them, there are, like, furminators and other things, combs that have a little bit of an aggressive tooth to them to get the dead fur out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful about not overusing those.
Oh, really?
Oh, hold on. I'm going to switch phones again.
Uh-oh. Already?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, I'm on phone number 3. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm sorry. I'm not the technical thing. But
portable phone bingo.
Yeah, and but they shouldn't be running this such a short amount of time.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'm not sure how to fix that. But any listeners, this is an official warning that we may lose contact with Houston here sometime during the course of this hour.
Right. Oh, boy. Okay, so if you have any...
So we're talking about brushing. If they like it, do it. If they don't, okay. Now, there's a lot of animals, particularly elderly animals, they really need to be brushed.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of dander starts accumulating fur and dead fur, and yeah, if they can't groom themselves, you need to do it for them.
You see, and that's, okay, if they don't like it, but they need it...
Then you have to do it. Tough love.
All right, yeah. You know, and people are a lot like parents, and, well, parents are people, but still, you know, with their pets, they don't want to make their little snowflake unhappy, you know what I mean?
Snowflake, ooh, fighting words. Now, some breeds of dogs, like the Commodore, are designed to be a sort of a Rastafarian look.
Yeah?
And, basically, any pet, you can actually make a turtle shell of mats on top of them. And they seem to be fairly comfortable, but to me it looks really gross.
Right, right. All those big, clumpy dreadlocks on their
fur. Now, something like a Commodore, if they do the dreadlocks properly and they keep them clean underneath and so forth, that actually looks okay to me. But if I've got a geriatric cat that can't groom itself and it's covered with the mats have grown together into a kind of a knobby sort of a shell of pure mat from one end to the other, that doesn't look nice to me.
Do you do groomings at Blue Cross?
No. Well, once upon a time we did. When I bought the practice, there was a lot of grooming being done. And I did grooming for 2 or 3 years after I bought it. But there were some issues. I kept going until my groomer quit, and then I didn't hire a new one. The issue was... people would come in with an animal with serious medical problems, but they're not asking for veterinary care. They're just wanting it to be groomed. And then it was almost like a malpractice situation to ignore these things. I would be tempted to do a lot of free stuff or super reduced price stuff.
Right.
Which, you know, they happily like that, those smoking hot deals. But it was really hard to set the boundaries between the grooming and the veterinary care because it happened under the same roof.
Right, and you're just you're a loving person because, I mean,
yeah,
you
so
want to help
ended
animals.
Up giving, you know, I was actually never making any profit. All the money was going to the groomer, which is fine. You know, as a marketing tool, it brings in customers. But then those customers were neglecting the animals, and I was doing free stuff for them too. And I said, you know, when the groomer quit, how about if I just don't do this anymore?
Right. Well, there's groomers out there that can.
Oh, yeah, and I totally respect them. And they call me. You know, I have a good relationship with the groomers. Many times a client will come in, sometimes a new client, saying, the groomer said, you really need to go and have this looked at. And so here I am.
Dr. Michael Berge. He is the owner, operator, Blue Cross Vet, 916 Clark Road in Aberdeen. It's in Central Park. 360-533-2591. You're open Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, 8 to 5, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. You are closed. Am I accurate in my...
That's correct.
All right.
And also, by the way, the Blue Cross Veterinary Clinic is the oldest veterinary clinic in the state of Washington.
In the state?
Yes. And one of the oldest in the country.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, established in 1929. One of these, the old Aberdeen businesses, which has not gone bankrupt. We're doing just fine.
Nice. And all vets around here are overbooked?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another question. You know, the veterinary supply, just like the supply of nurses and pharmacists and physicians, goes through cycles.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a glut at one point, although it's been a long time since there was a veterinarian glut. And then there can be a shortage, and there's a serious, serious shortage right now from all professionals, not just veterinarians. And then the way you deal with that is you shell out some cold, hard cash, government money, and build new veterinary colleges or expand the old ones. And then you have more veterinarians, and then you have a glut.
Huh.
But we haven't really had a glut for a long time. It's this kind of a sad thing. The United States really lost interest in government funding for education about 40 years ago. And we've been really, really cheap on that. There are colleges, but they're not getting the government funding that they did once upon a time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's really hard for some of these specialty jobs to do it entirely with private industry, because they want to be paid, but, you know, it costs you probably $500,000 to educate a veterinarian. Where's that money going to come from?
Right. Wow.
You know, the veterinarians do their best, and some of them are going out with debts of $200,000, but they no one even wants to lend them. You know, somewhere the money has to be paid for. And a lot of other countries, in fact, all of the other civilized countries, the government pays for colleges. You know, if you're smart enough to go to college, you just go to college. Here in the United States, it's kind of different.
Right. That's what I hear.
And of course, what that means is that when you can't get enough Americans to do a job, you hire them from overseas. And that's why you're seeing so many overseas nurses and physicians. It hasn't really happened yet with veterinarians, but we're going down that road. And these are good people. But they're, you know, we could have some more American physicians and nurses too if we just invested in the colleges that we should be investing in.
So, are there ways to keep our pets healthy? Now, you being a vet, don't you want sick pets so you have more customers? How does that work?
Run that sentence by me again.
Ways to keep our pets healthy.
Okay. Now, keeping healthy, whether you're a dog or a human, is a lot of that is lifestyle. You need to eat good food. You need to get plenty of rest. If you're a pet particularly, you need to keep your parasites under control. And when you do those things, you normally get a good golden zone of health. And then the ill health will be things like if you lose control of your fleas or you break a leg or something. Basically, just give them what they need. I don't know if that's a very clear answer to that, but lifestyle is really important.
So if I'm laying around the house all day and my pet is laying around the house all day, that might not necessarily be a good thing?
Okay. If your pet is a chihuahua, no problem. They'll exercise themselves by jumping off the sofa and, you know, chasing the other chihuahua. And having multiple pets is a good thing. If you're laying around with your 110-pound mastiff, well, yeah, that mastiff probably needs some serious exercise. So, yes, you need to put on your raincoat, grab the leash, and go give your dog some exercise. Maybe you'll get some benefit, too.
Can you recommend, like, any hardcore, strong leashes? You know, I have insane dogs that either chew, you know, they want to chew through it, or they pull off it, or it's just always something. Is okay. there any Indestructo things like that out there?
Probably, but I don't have the brand names memorized, but if you check around, you'll find some good stuff. But you do have to remember that every dog comes with a pair of tin snips built into their jaws. And if you put any form of cloth into those carnassial teeth, snip, snip, snicker, snip, it's gone.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way their jaws are made. So even the highest quality nylon. Now, here's a good thing to search for. Look for Kevlar leash. I have no idea whether you'll find anything.
Kevlar?
Kevlar is a fiber that they use to make bulletproof vests.
Right.
And some of the extreme sports people are really fond of it. So if you had a Kevlar core, you know, the same thing that's supposed to stop bullets might resist your dog's teeth a little bit.
Right. I was thinking like, you know, a big thick chain.
The chain, yep. Chain's always good. Of course, I don't like, you know, the dogs can hurt their teeth on the chain.
Oh. Well, I don't want them to hurt themselves.
You know? And they mostly don't. But dogs, when they're distraught, they rarely, if you were using a chain as a leash, they would not bite on that.
Yeah.
But when dogs are locked up in a kennel, like at the clinic, and they're really homesick, they will sometimes chew on the chain link and can hurt their teeth from that.
Oh. Now, my daughters asked me this when we recently had kittens. If kittens lose their teeth.
Yes, every baby mammal loses its teeth. Your kittens, puppies, humans, they lose them at different periods of time. And puppies and kittens come with little needle teeth. Really, really sharp, and they lose them early on. You know, they're starting to lose their first teeth, I think, when they're around 3.5 or 4 months old. And then they lose every one of the little baby teeth are lost, and meanwhile, the adult teeth are growing in. And, yeah, that's just the way they're designed.
And will you find teeth just around the house?
Sometimes. Most of the time, you never find them. But now and then, you'll find one. And if you want to, you know, tape it to a postcard and keep it as a souvenir, sure. I'll bet you could find online where you could get it bronzed.
Really?
I'm just making that up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, anything you can think of.
Yeah. You're pretty good at making things up.
Hey, I'm a veterinarian. If I don't have the answer, what answer would you like?
Right. Well, just wing it. Okay, pet vitamins, do they work? Or are they...
Oh, okay, theoretically, if you're buying a premium food, it already has those exact same vitamins added to it, and therefore you don't need to buy vitamins. But I'm kind of a belt and suspenders guy, and what if the dog food is stale, or what if they cheated on you? So maybe some vitamins in addition to your high quality food might not be a bad idea.
Oh, I got a text. My dog is 10. He's a corgi mixed with pit bull. He won't get in my car anymore. I have to drag him. No fun. I somehow missed a hair-covered claw that is curled up in a circle. How far does the quick grow all the way around a complete circle? Can I tranquilize him and transport? Part of that I didn't understand. But
okay, there's like two or three questions here. Number one is that the dog doesn't want to go in the car anymore. We get that a lot.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a hard thing. Now, it's not so hard to grab a corgi, but a pit bull sometimes, you know, a corgi pit bull cross sounds like an interesting combination.
Yeah.
If you're trying to grab that dog and it doesn't want to go into the car, it might actually be able to put up a bit of resistance. That's kind of a tough one. Now the business with the curled nail, it needs to be trimmed, of course. Sometimes you can do that at home. If it's curled really around, then you need to use a side cutting style of clippers, which are basically like wire cutters,
yeah.
And you kind of come in from the side over there. And if the dog holds still, yeah, you can do that at home. I would almost never tranquilize a dog for that. I would just kind of grab a funky assistant and just do it.
I have another text, and we're almost out of time. I have a Chippin' half Chihuahua mini Dobie pincher. At times she gets excited and starts breathing off. Sounds like there's something stuck in her throat. I was told it's her trachea collapsing. Is that true? And if not,
yes,
what
it is true.
It? Okay.
A lot of small breed dogs have a delicate trachea that can get pinched shut at the drop of a hat.
Anything they can do to help?
Well, go to the veterinarian and counsel with it, but in terms of surgery, not really. Okay. You have to sort of live with it.
Dr. Berge, I appreciate you calling up, and hopefully next month you'll be in the studio.
That's my plan.